Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, it's my good friend and co-host. You are never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello. It is fantastic to be back. And what a week we've just had.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're here to talk all about the World Crazy Golf Championship 2023. We're going to talk about five top stories we've selected. We're going to interview the winners, the champions, both of the main competition and the novice as well. Simon, before we get into that, can you sum it up quickly for that? How was the tournament this year? It was record-breaking in a lot of ways. How did you find it?
From the weather to the scores. Yeah. To the participants, the standard, anything you can imagine. It was one of the best weeks I've had in mini golf. In fact, I've said to a lot of people it might be my favourite ever. So hopefully the listeners think the same.
Let me just tell you something that's happening in my house at the moment. We've got four chickens recently. Don't know if I told you about this. One of the chickens we knew straight away was going to be a problem. All right. And it appears they've hopped the fence into our neighbour's garden. So my girlfriend at the moment is running around trying to get this chicken, and it's quite this commotion has excited our dog. So if you hear our dog in the background, that's why he's excited, because we're trying to gather a chicken. One more quick thing before we get into it. All right. We've always said that this podcast isn't really about us. It's about the sport and the great performances and interviewing people. But I think we do have an excuse now to talk about you, Simon, because one quite amazing thing happened to you right on the edge of the cut. Do you want to talk about what happened and explain it?
Yeah, it's been a few days. I just about came to terms with it. You know, for those mere mortals amongst us, making the cut is quite an achievement. That's, you know, something for the bucket list of saying you're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so on day two, I came in with a good chance. Mm-hmm. And I had the usual hard luck. The aces don't drop. Nothing quite happened, but I stuck at it. I'm getting somewhere. I didn't drop a shot all day until the last hole of the day.
Oh.
That last hole of the day, in the end, put me into a tie for 15th with five people.
Oh, no.
And it turned out that four of those five would make the top 18 and one would miss out.
Okay, so five people tied, only four can go through to the cut, including, and you're in that five.
I'm in that five, so that's a 20% chance of missing out. They counted it back in aces.
Yeah.
And then that left me and Stephen Skinner, who's had a fantastic 12 months.
Sure.
And then they counted it back in twos. And by virtue of the fact that he had a four, meant it had less twos. So I become possibly the first person ever to be 15th and not make the cut.
Sure.
But, you know, it's sitting around with a lot of mini golf. So it was nice to watch. It was fine.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, not at all salty.
Okay. So joining us, helping us recap the World Crazy Golf Championship 2023, we have the winner of the main event. Please welcome to the 54 Problems podcast, Adam Kelly. Hello, Adam.
Good afternoon, fellas. The last in my busy, busy schedule of interviews this week, and it's a pleasure to be doing it with you guys.
Well, save the best for last, eh?
Quite right.
No, thanks for joining us. So this is the second time. I think you must be the first person to have two separate episodes divided by a few months with us.
I guess so, yeah. I guess, there's a 100% record of winning the World Crazies when 54 Problems has been a thing. And isn't 54 Problems apt this year as well with the 54 different tee shots that everyone's had to learn for the World Crazies?
It really was 54 Problems. That name paid off for us in the long run. How are you feeling? Is it sort of sunk in yet that you managed to do it again?
Yeah, I mean, it sinks in. It sinks in quicker the second time, I think.
Okay.
Last year was a bit of a whirlwind. It was a much more intense final day, final round, I'd say. This whole tournament just felt a lot more relaxed than a lot of ways to me. So I guess it's sunk in a bit more. The major difference I've had this year was coming into it as a defending champion. And particularly with it being the 20th year and the amount of media interest that's been drumming up and that the course have managed to get, it was a lot. It was quite a lot of work and stress around speaking to media, which I hadn't really anticipated more than anything else. Like I say, the overriding theme for me this year was probably just that much more relaxed nature to it. I didn't have that pressure on me to go and get it done because I'd already got it done. And this year was just much more enjoyable, probably all round.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to dig into that a little bit more later with your interview. For now, let's look back at what we've selected were the top five stories across the entire tournament. Simon, do you want to kick us off with number five?
Yes. So it was unusual weather conditions. I think anyone that's played this tournament knows you can be exposed to the wind or the elements or a downpour. We had something a bit new. It was constantly hot.
Yeah.
And if anybody practiced, there was a bit of wind through the week, but not in the weekend. It was almost too good, the conditions to play. And I think a lot of people felt that. And you coupled that up with having the separate tee boxes, you didn't quite know where the next good score was going to come from or who it would be. And there was no consistency. I thought the standard of play was excellent, but it was just fascinating because the next good score could come from anywhere. And I think we've seen that. I mean, I'll call out Paul Tuck got 27 on the Sunday. And you never, you know, sort of, it's probably about 30 to 40 people in the field could have made a 30 or better at any time. And that's how it felt. Even though not many did, it had that feel. And that made it fascinating. The leaderboard was everywhere and anywhere at times.
Yeah, so we're talking difficult conditions, both in terms of the weather, 30 degree temperature, and the new tee boxes leading to unexpected results. What can we point out here? Mark Chapman finishing seventh with a scoring of 37. That was quite a surprise. Seve just on the edge of the top 10. Seve Kukielka just finishing 10th. And there was on the other side as well, like you say, Paul's 27. In terms of the tee boxes, I've said my bit about that. I think once I played them, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, how it mixed up the competition a little bit and made it feel fresh. I just wish that we were told when we registered for it so we could have booked our flights with a reasonable amount of time to practice. Adam, how did you feel about both of those? Did either of those get to you, the conditions in terms of the temperatures and the tee boxes?
The tee boxes, I'll come on to the tee boxes second. I thought that was okay. Brilliant. And I, from the moment I heard about it, I thought that was brilliant. The weather, and this goes for both of them, you can't do anything about it anyway, can you? So there's no point in letting it affect you. But the weather, you really can't stop it from affecting you. It was hot and humid, and particularly on Sunday, I've never known so little wind in Hastings. It was really pretty brutal. There was a lot of pollen in the air, which I'm not a fan of. So that was a big thing. I think I drank about 6 to 8 litres of water each day over the weekend, and needed it. That was a lot to keep on top of and to try and keep your focus on. It was just fatiguing being out there, if I'm honest. Tee boxes, I know there were certainly mixed opinions when that one came out. I think it's brilliant. I think that the fact that the course likes to throw some things up to keep us on our toes, and particularly with it being such a big 20th anniversary year, it was a good one. Obviously, it was only a few years ago that they put in the rules about all obstacles being in play, not being able to play around the side on the windmill, on the lighthouse, etc., which was controversial at the time. Everyone quickly got used to it and loved it. But no, the tee boxes, it really, like you say, it threw up something different because there were different players who seemed to find different ones easier as well. I know it was fairly unanimous that round three was probably the toughest. But that gave those openings on the leaderboard for when one of these unexpected, maybe 30s or below that Simon's on about came in. That was really shooting people through the leaderboard. So it kind of made everything a little bit more interesting. You less predictable exactly who was going to come in with what. So all round, I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah, I felt like the course actually needed the tee boxes in a way, and I didn't know that before I played it. But now they've put the new felt in so many holes, like hole 7's a good example. And that's taken the danger away from the second putts, along with taking out the metal cups. There is a danger for the midfield and this, you know, the sort of the people that play the BMG Tour particularly, that they could just tear that course up. But those scores were held back just an edge from getting too high and too ridiculous, which I think the tee boxes were a masterstroke, but I wouldn't have been aware until I played it this year.
Mm. Yeah, I know that what myself and my dad Tony, we mentioned a couple of times, trying to work out a way they could do it, and I don't think they probably could have done fairly, was we almost wish it had gone a step further, and the tee boxes weren't even announced until last minute to really keep everyone on their toes. And it was just right, 5 to 8, first morning of the tournament, you're not teeing off from where you thought you were, you're teeing off from here now. Like to see how people cope with that. So yeah, if Sean or Simon happen to listen to this podcast, there's an idea for next year. I don't know how you could quite do it and keep it fair across the field, but I'm all for shaking things up and giving us extra challenges to think about.
I would have loved to see that. I don't know. I think there would have been outcry initially. I think they might have had a riot on their hands. I'm not sure.
And that would have just been Luke. Luke would not have been happy if we get anyone else.
Okay, so our story at number 4 is the overall team competition. I'm so glad that they did it again. It seems to be a regular feature this year. It was so much fun. I can call out a couple of things. One that really sticks out to me, we had a 13-year-old young man playing, Harley, his name was, one of the nephews of Planet Hastings team member. After the initial round that everyone in the team tournament plays, his team were joint first, which I think is an incredible achievement from a 15-year-old young man. So well done to Harley for that achievement. Another interesting thing in the team tournament, it got to a point where it was me versus you, Simon, in the semi-final. And not just my team versus your team, it went to sudden death. And because we were both in the first position, it was literally me versus you. Maybe luckily we both scored a 2, so it went on to the next position. And so it wasn't decided by me versus you, but your team eventually won there and you went on to the semi-final. Do you want to take us through what happened after that semi-final?
Yeah, so went into the semi-final against the other podcaster that was with us. Tom Loftus of Podcast Toured stunned us all by coming over to play the event because he'd heard how good it was and he was loving the team event. Tom plays the game with a sort of spirit of fun and he enjoys that sort of interaction, you know, as much as competitive play, and he was loving it. So came up against two of last year's winners, Seve Kukielka, Stephen Skinner, this time joined by Tom Loftus, and promptly they stepped up, made 2 aces out of the 3 shots. I aced mine, we made 1 out of 3 and went out. But great play, fantastic team, and no surprise that they went on to win the team event. That's twice in 2 years that Seve and Steve Skinner, I think, have won it. So you can make the format to play the iconic holes, you can make it into a shootout, you can make it a playoff, you can do anything you want to level the playing field. And yet, at the end of it, you've got 2 of the top players standing there. Oh, this year, 3 with Tom.
Sure. And 2 years in a row as well, Stephen Skinner was the hero, right? He managed to ace through the lighthouse to secure the win for his team. They beat the Hags, and it's amazing to see the Hags in the second position, a team of people who work on the Hastings Adventure Golf Course, including Ben Steadman, who had an amazing year last year and came second. It was sort of a little bit heartbreaking to see him come second again, this time in the team tournament. But I mean, it didn't seem to faze him. He seemed to be loving the weekend. He had a great attitude about it.
Yeah, I mean, those Hastings Adventure staff have like fully embraced the tournament though.
Mm.
They get it. They turn up with their Nifos. They play the way we play, but on their course. I just love the fact they wanted to get involved and do it, you know, partially on their terms, but mostly in ours. And they can play. They can play. It just shows if you get your hours on a course, you're going to get somewhere. So I'd be fascinated if one of them just took it up and, you know, came to Margate or went somewhere else.
Yeah.
To see what they could do. But yeah, I love them getting involved. And if they play that well, it's only so long before one of them shocks somebody somewhere. Most likely Hastings.
And we were talking about the tee boxes and the designs of the tee boxes having 1, 2, 3. Didn't that lend itself amazingly to the team competition where one of your team had to play on 1, another on 2, and another on 3? And then the playoffs, you know, sudden death from box 1, sudden death box from box 2. I know that tripped up the EC team with Martin on T-Box 1. So those T-Boxes really lent themselves to the team format.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know if they thought about that, but if they scrap the T-Boxes for next year, they should keep it for the team event at a minimum.
Yeah.
Because it made sense and everybody got to own the position in the T-Box.
Mm, yeah.
But I think, I don't know if it's just my team, I think most people that picked the left box didn't quite understand that made them sort of de facto team captain if it came to a playoff. Because I didn't bag, say, the left box to make myself the most important. And then
I did. Taken, that's the difference between us.
Oh, that's a given. I mean, that is an absolute given. Yeah. The given is that you would look at a playoffs pack and I wouldn't.
Simon, the third story. We're going into the top three now. What's the third story from the weekend? The story in third place.
So no matter how you look at an event, if it's about the competitive side or if it's about the social side, or in my case, it's always both, it was the number of participants and the amount of internationals and what they added. We had, I believe, the biggest field, maybe the second biggest. I think there was one 15 plus years ago. It was huge. Mm-hmm. But we had an absolutely massive field on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And within that, we had internationals from all over the planet. We had people like Josh Mars from Australia. I mean, Tom Loftus wasn't even our only American. We had Aaron Kaminsky come over from Wall Street Mini Golf. And you look down that field, you look in Van Golf, you can see the flags. I was quite proud now. I can have the Scottish flag now instead of the UK one. You know, I'm somewhat of a unionist. I'm not afraid to say it, but I do like seeing that Scottish flag. I was happy. Add that to the colour.
And Robin Schwartzman as well, the first American woman playing ever. Adam, I think I heard you being interviewed and you said that all of these international players congregating really made it feel like this year was a true world championship. It was a world competition. And I really agreed with that. I think the vibe was incredible.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I thought it was not just the fact that we had players traveling a fair distance to compete, which is always impressive and always adds a kind of element of prestige, I think, to the tournament when people are valuing it that much. But just the spirit, like you say, that people played in, epitomised probably by Josh and Tom, and seeing them kind of lift the gommery together at the end was a lovely moment. And just the spirit that guys played this tournament in was fantastic. It really felt like, the spirit of the World Crazies was alive and well. Because that's what this tournament is, isn't it? It's not, it shouldn't be the most intense kind of focused tournament out there compared to some of, maybe when you're looking at the kind of World Mini Golf Sport Championship. It's the World Crazy Golf Championship, and we shouldn't forget that. It's a good laugh. And it's a real bucket list for mini golf fans around the world And obviously Josh and Tom are well known as being just that, as well as obviously Robin, Aaron, Frank now is establishing himself as well. So it was exactly that. It was having these guys not only come over and put the effort in and the miles in to get here, but just play it in such a wonderful spirit. Really, really made it quite special. I couldn't agree more that was a real memorable thing about this year. Yeah.
Yeah, so you mentioned the Gomery there. That goes to the player with the most amount of aces outside of the top 18. And I thought it was so fitting and it capped off this event really nicely. Then it went to Josh and Tom, two international players. I thought that was fantastic. And seeing them celebrate together was really good fun as well. Okay, so in second place, our second top story for the week, we're going to take listeners now a little bit behind the scenes to the recording of our live 54 problems episode. So this was something that we started last year, and the way it started, Simon and I, we've got a particular venue that we love in Hastings, one of our favorites, the 1200 Postcards, which is a small craft beer pub. It's not very big, but it has got two floors, and the upstairs space is sometimes used as an exhibition space. Local artists show their wares there, and we got in there last year at the top. And I think last year there was some kind of vinyl evening, so we knew this year we were warned in advance that there was going to be a poetry night downstairs, and we thought, fine. As long as they don't mind, we were worried about them more than anything. We said that as long as they don't mind and they're aware of it, we'll happily do it. Okay. So the night of the live episode, we got a good crowd, but it became clear very quickly that we were going to be listening to everything that happened downstairs, and in particular the microphones would pick it up and it'd be in the episode. So what happened was someone would say their poetry and they'd get a big round of applause, and we kind of had to work that into the episode. So someone would talk about their practice schedule, they'd get a big round of applause from the downstairs poetry, and we had to say something like, oh, it's good, there's lots of fans of practicing in in the room. And also someone would be speaking and then we'd hear a bit of the poetry from downstairs, and it could be something like, why does everyone hate me so much? We just hear random things like this.
Yeah, there is some unfortunate laughs at times in it. And yeah, to be fair, I mean, anyone that's listened to it, it's not the best sound quality. We know that. But, I mean, who knows if we succeed, but we set out to capture a genuine flavour of what it's like to be that week in Hastings with those people. And to me, and I'm not always a big fan of listening to the podcast back, because it's difficult when it's yourself, isn't it?
Sure, sure.
But to me, listening to it back, despite the sound quality, that was such a flavour of what that week was. And hopefully, you know, I'll come across it in 5 years' time and think, oh yeah, Tom was here and Josh was here and we had those laughs, and there was a poetry night that Ted McIver actually didn't go to. So yeah, can't wait.
Well, he was busy playing Call of Cthulhu, the board game, I know that. But we spoke about it and we said, look, we could try and do this in like a quiet venue. We could go to someone's Airbnb or something like that, but it wouldn't be the same. So we are more than happy to do it competing with some poetry night or some vinyl night, just for the laughs of it. And then we went out afterwards with a few people to play darts and pool, including Mark Chapman, and he ended up in my dart team and we won. So at least I won something over the weekend, even if it was just the darts with Mark Chapman.
Yeah, at least I won something over the weekend as well.
Hey! Oh, he was on good form, actually. Maybe not in the course, but he was on good form all week. Yeah. It was a thoroughly enjoyable company. I sulked in the background that night at the pool table because I'm bad at darts and I don't like being bad at things. So I sulked at the pool table with the Hungarians until people would come and join me.
Yeah, I got to listen to that Thursday episode as well. It was It was chaos, wasn't it? That's fair to say. But yeah, no, like you say, it definitely came across. The kind of fun that everyone was having definitely comes across. And I think that's the important thing, isn't it? So.
One funny thing was Mark going on about his plumbing bill, how he had to win this year so he could play his plumbing bill. And this was the only year that he was going to go in it for the money so he could pay his plumber. And then he left with 200 quid or 150 or something like that.
More than me.
Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, if anyone wants to join in this chaos next year, hopefully we'll be back. I don't know what's going to be downstairs. We've had vinyl, we've had poetry. Who knows what we'll get next year, but come and join us. It is a good laugh. All right, Simon, the number one story, cap us off from this incredible week. What have you got?
So we mentioned the tea boxes. So yeah. Despite the tea boxes, we had a winner with what looks to be the best ever set of scores we've had. And that winner is Adam, who's with us now. He had three different rounds in the 20s. He opened 29-29, I believe, and then shot an amazing 28 in the crazy round at the end. And I think the quality that was shown for someone that doesn't play week in, week out on the tour to come back and tear it up like that was just something to witness. We all like a close tournament. And I suppose with the way the seventh round in the format is, it gives the illusion of it being close. I'm not sure it was, so I'm interested to ask and find out.
Trust me, it was close. it probably looked better than it was in the end. But yeah, it was really close, and at times on Sunday I thought it was slipping away, to be quite honest. The end score is great. I'm absolutely delighted with 35 under.
Yeah.
Matched last year's score with, like you say, with the tee positions. You would think working against good scoring. I am thrilled with that. But yeah, no. Ed Pope and Frank particularly put some real pressure on at the start of day two. In the first couple of rounds, I lost my lead. Ended up in a three-way tie with two rounds to go. And there were definitely times I felt like it was slipping away. So no, I was probably flattered in the end by a five-shot cushion, but it was close.
Well, to me, in that final round, it looked like if you didn't keep fighting to the end, then Frank could quite easily overtake you, because Frank was getting aces and it looked like he was really putting the pressure on, or he was attempting to put the pressure on. He was fighting, but then you just slammed the door in his face and you kept on being able to respond with aces yourself. So it looked like a big fight.
It was, yeah. I mean, Frank went off like a rocket in that round.
Mm.
And yeah, like I said, I couldn't quite believe at times the consistency with which I was following him in, because it did feel like he was heaping the pressure on. But yeah, no, I was delighted I managed to keep matching it. If you actually look back at it, I beat Frank by five shots in the end. All of those five shots were gained over him in round one. He just got off to a slightly slower start than me. And from then on, he just kept putting the pressure on and kept coming back at me. So, no, Frank really, really piled it on in that final round. And, yeah, you're right. I had to produce what is up there with probably one of my best competition rounds I've ever played, if I'm honest, just to hold him off. So it was perhaps not one that's gone down to the wire in terms of only a shot or two being in it in the last couple of holes. But in terms of the overall quality, one of the most high quality final rounds I've ever been a part of. I think between us in the final group, there were 21 aces, which I think under the crazy rules is pretty phenomenal. And actually all around the course that was happening as well. It wasn't just that top group. There were some really low scores in that final and throughout the tournament.
So yeah, something Mark Chapman, who's obviously a previous champion, has been quoted as saying is, when you come back into the event, having won it before, you have a sort of mental two-shot advantage. He thinks it gave him a couple of shots coming in as champion. Did you feel that? Do you think that's what added to your confidence?
Yeah, you can't put a number on it and how many shots it gives you, but there's definitely an effect of that, yeah. you hear, I think the sports that you probably hear it most said about is usually combat sports and martial arts and stuff like that. You always hear the pundits say that a boxer or a martial artist becomes that bit better as soon as they got the belt around their waist. And it's partly the confidence that gives the individual, and it's probably partly the aura it gives them, that other people have come up against them and lost before. So it's easy to fall into that. In truth, with regards to Mark, I probably fell into that a couple of years in a row, having got so close the first year he won it, only being a shot away from him. Then as soon as the same thing starts happening the following year, you're probably guilty of just falling into a pattern and thinking, oh, this feels familiar. I'm used to just getting edged out by Mark, and it's going to happen again. And it's self-fulfilling, really. So there's an element of that. And there's a reason why we played 20 years and there's only been 7 winners. And with only one exception, everyone who wins this tournament comes back and wins it again. Because it's not easy to win. And having that edge of, like I say, you feel the familiarity. Now I've managed to switch that feeling that I had of finishing runner-up to Mark. And I did feel like it was familiar ground, to be honest, going into that final round. As soon as a couple of aces rolled in, I was like, yeah, this is familiar. This feels like what it feels like to win the World Crazies. And it's an edge. It's definitely an edge. I think Mark's hit the nail on the head there. That familiarity of winning and getting over the line in such a big tournament certainly helps you the next year, yeah.
And the other thing, of course, that was different this year, being a champion, was that you had a lot more media commitments, which is obviously great. And I think everyone would be extremely grateful for you to fill these commitments, because the more we can get the World Crazy Golf Championships in the media, the better. And you're a fantastic person to talk to. But it did eat into your practice time a little bit, and you don't have as much practice time as other people. How did you find that? Did that weigh on your mind a little bit with the various media commitments that you had to do? Because I know it can be a thing of, sort of hurry up and wait with the media. They say they're going to be there at 11:30. You're waiting 2 hours. They're still not there. And all of a sudden they're there and you have to go, go, go. So was that off-putting a little bit? How did you find that?
Yeah, obviously it's not ideal preparation. And like I said, it did eat quite significantly into the relatively small amount of practice time I'd given myself. But there's no point in getting frustrated about that. At the end of the day, that's the result and the consequence of what I achieved last year, right? So there's no point in getting annoyed that I'm being treated like the World Crazy Golf Champion, because that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
It's a distraction, but that's part and parcel of what comes with being the defending champion, particularly in this tournament, which generates so much more media interest than most of the tournaments we play. And I don't know if this was just my experience, because I've never experienced being the defending champion before, but it felt like there was more media this year than usual. Being the 20th year, being the biggest one ever. I hadn't realised quite how much there was going to be, if I'm honest. I think there was quite a number of different national radio stations. I've been on TalkSport earlier today, as well as 5 Live. I know Simon and myself have both been on BBC Scotland at times this week, Times Radio, and then BBC and ITV and the World Feed were all filming. Not just on the practice day, but actually throughout the weekend. That was a bit of a constant. There's no point in getting frustrated by it. It's brilliant that we are getting this publicity. It's brilliant that these people are interested on giving us a bit of a platform to let people know what we do, and to hopefully drum up a bit more support in future for next year's event as well. And it's an honour to be asked to do these things. It's something that not many people are asked to do, and it's a consequence, like I say, of being the defending champions. There's no point complaining about it or worrying about it. And it was all good fun. I thought there were some really good pieces produced. I thought the BBC Southeast piece featuring myself and Mark and Josh that was filmed for quite a while on the Friday. They did a great job. And the Sky Sports Roundup, which is obviously real big publicity for us that has been since the tournament, was fantastic. So hopefully a lot of good's come out of it, and it's helped raise the profile of the tournament even further. And like I say, it's an honour to be asked, really. So yeah, a distraction, but quite a welcome one.
I think this is going to be the final question from me. You mentioned next year's tournament. Do you think when we get closer to next year, you're going to be thinking, oh, how nice would the hat trick be? How nice would it be to win 3 in a row? Or do you think you're just going to keep being your steady self that you have been over these last 2 years? Do you think that's going to come into your head at all? Are you going to want it more next year?
I don't think I'm going to want it more. I want it every year. I can assure you of that. I'm not going to be short of motivation anyway, whatever year it is. I won't treat anything differently. I didn't particularly do anything, any of the things I could control at least. I didn't do anything differently this year to what I did last year or any previous year for that matter. No, I won't be treating it any differently in probably my actions or in my mind. It would be lovely to do 3 in a row. Obviously, only 2 people have done that before, Tim and Mark. So that'd be a lovely record to have, a good club to join. But it's not essential. I've already got 2 more than almost everyone. And
that's true.
there's no need to be greedy about it. Even if next year doesn't come off, there's going to be plenty more years to keep adding to the tally. And even if I never do, like I say, 2 is more than perhaps at some points in the last few years I thought I might ever have. No, I don't think there's going to be anything particularly different about next year in terms of the way I think about it or preparation. But I've got to say, I'm already excited for it. I've already got the date in the calendar, and I'll be there, I can assure you.
Yeah, you've done a fantastic job, obviously, of seeing it out and winning 2 the last 2 years. And it would be so obvious to ask, you know, who's going to be your main competition next year. But I think we know those names. I think we all know it's Ed Pope. It's Frank if he comes back from America, and it'll be Mark Chapman's bound to come back. So I'm going to ask you a slightly different question. I'm going to frame it differently. Who do you think will be the next new winner of the tournament?
If you've asked me that before this week, it would have been Ed Pope. It would have been a short answer.
Mm-hmm.
It still very well might be. But the way Frank played this week really impressed me. I think if Frank continues playing this tournament every year, he'll win one of the next few. It's more of a matter of whether Ed beats into it, or perhaps Seve, or perhaps someone who we kind of don't see coming. That's a roundabout way of saying it, isn't it? If I have to give you one name, Ed.
Yeah. Frank. All right, Adam, thank you so much for your time. You can hang around a bit, but congratulations. Thank you so much for your time. Last year was fantastic to talk to you. This year was fantastic to talk to you. Your honesty, your humility, the way that you approach the weekend. I think you're a huge role model for a lot of people, and congratulations on your second victory.
Thank you. Thanks, and pleasure to talk to both of you as well.
Okay, so one of the things that we want to do this year, we've been a bit inspired. We want to do a hot topic inspired by one of the things that happened over the week. So a hot topic is where we pose a yes or no question, and then we put it on Facebook for everyone to vote. So if you can vote, please do. If you want to leave a comment in there as well explaining your vote, that would be great. So we've been inspired here by what Ruth Burke did during the tournament. First of all, Ruth was one of the 3 people who was fantastic and did our episode for International Women's Day and how we sort of celebrated or respected that. From that, Ruth was sort of encouraged or motivated to organise a women's competition at the Crazy Golf tournament, but it was kind of an unofficial competition. So it was Friday morning. I believe there were 11 women playing. Simon, correct me if I'm wrong now. I believe it was 11. And they went around the course and played one round. I was one of the scorers. They didn't shut the course for it, and it was an unofficial thing as well. People just tried to move people out of the way of upcoming holes. I thought it was an absolutely fantastic competition. I was really proud of Ruth for organising it. So the hot topic is, bear in mind we have teams, novice, main competition, a junior competition. Should there be an official women's competition at the Hastings World Crazy Golf Championship? Simon, I don't know if you have an opinion on this.
Well, there's definitely an appetite for it. I think we all want to see female participation in the game. One of the things we love about mini golf is that it's a leveler. Anybody can do it. And we have some fantastic women who can and do it to a great level. So to give them a chance to pit themselves against each other and not just us, and encourage that development, maybe foster a more welcoming atmosphere that seems less intimidating. I don't think we would intend to intimidate, but I suppose walking up to 100 plus males doing something could be intimidating. And it's not our place to say. I think the event that they had on the Friday morning was held in fantastic spirit, and you've seen that that togetherness and that kinship that they had. And I don't know if there's space for it as a separate event, unless it's exactly what it was that we've seen.
Sure.
But should it be a medal? Should there be a category within it? I mean, I believe we have is it the British Championships, I think it is, that we have top women quite often at Margate. Is one of the majors in the UK. Is there a place for at the absolute least, a medal? Or maybe even for the top woman to have a separate cut to play a crazy round? You've got to look at something. Any ideas?
Well, if people listening have any ideas as well, please share it on the Facebook. Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. I think it would be nice if we could somehow pump some of the official money over into it, whatever that competition looks like, whether it's what we did on Friday or whether it's just a normal competition, but a category within that would be fantastic. Joining us now, we have the winner of the World Crazy Golf Championship 2023 novice category. Please welcome to the 54 Problems podcast, Murray Thompson. Hello, Murray.
Hello, how are we doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, yeah, very good, thank you. Very good, just finished work.
Has it settled in yet that you've won the novice category at the World Crazy Golf Championship?
Yeah, it has definitely settled in, really. It's pretty much, I was happy with it, because obviously the way that I went from sort of flew back in the third round, and then obviously I had to get myself together to play and try and take the victory. So yeah, it has definitely sunk in. Obviously, I've taken the trophy to work, so yeah, I like to show it off because of the fundraiser I did.
Yeah, what did they say at work?
Well, I did it all for Teenage Cancer Trust. So I did it as every customer had to make like a £2 guess of how many holes in one I'd get for the whole event. So pretty much everyone had a vested interest of how I was going to get on, and no one guessed right. So,
I love that. Yeah, how many did you get?
Yeah, so all the prizes have rolled over. I just didn't do £5 a ticket, and off we go again.
So you two have something in common. You have both won the Novice Championship.
Nice.
So Andrew went on to play the game quite a lot after. Mm-hmm. He's got quite involved in it. He's sat here today doing a podcast. Mm. How do you see that you have a future playing mini golf, or was this a one-off?
No, I'll be coming back next year.
Nice.
100%. And I'll try and play the local ones. But I've got a four-month-old baby at the minute, so carting him around the UK is not quite. But it was nice, because obviously I haven't played competitive golf for a while. And I'll honestly tell you, I was more nervous doing that than I must have been a kid the last time I felt like that.
Mm.
which is really surprising. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, we get quite a lot of people with a golf background come and give mini golf and putting a go at some point. How did you feel it compares? Are you impressed by the standard of people that putt?
Oh, massively. Yeah, massively, massively. And it's such a different game. My friend turned up Sunday. He plays on the Sunshine Tour. So I think, you know, he shot 22 under in his last round, and he said he couldn't comprehend how good they were. And he's just, yeah, he was blown away. He put it on his little Facebook thing. He said, I just can't get over how good the standard is and how they just never look like missing. And I was like, well, you know, can we give it a go? So he may even do that.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you definitely put the hours in, you put the preparation in for months. I think we're all in different WhatsApp chats and Messenger chats, and at some point somebody posted up, oh, this Murray guy's put a video up, he's getting better. Do you think he's genuine? Do you think he'll actually win it? And I think we all passed about the videos and thought, is he a joker? Is he genuine? It turns out you are genuine. Would you like to tell us about your focus and preparation?
Well, that was the plan, wasn't it? Obviously, because I was shooting these rounds, I was doing these edited videos, and I thought, well, I've got to leave the full frame. So when I did the course record, when I let it as a one continuous shot, so there was no doubt then. I think when people started to see that, because I did it for the banter as well, just to get it going.
Sure.
Then it was like, well, that's definitely going to put a cat amongst the pigeons, that video, because that proves I can do it in one round. But of course, you know, I was setting myself up a little bit, but after I hold five out of the first seven to get going, I thought, oh my god, like, it's actually going the same. And then it was a very different story, but you know, what can you do, really?
Yeah, so you got 30 in your first round, which is an incredible score for anyone, let alone a novice player. And then like you said earlier, third round was a little bit shaky, 41. So you really had to fight back in the end. How did you find the crazy round? Because it's not something you can really practice for on your own, or not something that you can get used to the pressure for, at least anyway. How did you find that round, knowing that you had to fight to get back in it?
Well, I think I'd hit the point where I was like, well, just don't make any more mistakes. You know, just make some putts and off you go. But when I think I heard the young girl, her name now. She finished just behind my ball and effectively had to make bogey because that had happened. And I thought, this is going to get very interesting in the latter stages if it gets close. And it did on 15, and I felt terrible. Where I was snookered, and I just looked at the guy and I'm like, well, we've both got to make three here. There's one in front of you, and I can try and bounce it off the wall, but I can't. So bang, off you went through the bunker, and it was just. Yeah, so I kind of felt so guilty, but I'm like, well, this is it. Like, this is how it works. It's I thoroughly enjoyed it. I do think it leaves the door open to things happening in that final round if you do get to the pro event, which are not quite as who's played the best golf, but you know, it's crazy golf. There you go. It's in the title.
Look, from my side, I don't think you have absolutely anything to feel guilty about. Fair play to you for doing that.
Well, again, yeah, you've just got to do it. You've got to do what you've got to do. And yeah, that was the end of that one. So yeah, and clung on to the end. So it was good. I mean, to be fair, the best bit is after that whole day of the hots and the ups and the downs, I hold the four footer at the end. And I'd just been told by Martin Williams that it was for the title. And I'm like, well, this has got to go in because I'm done today now. Like, I heard it and I thought, are you sneaky?
So, I can't believe he told you that before the part.
Well, because you don't know, do you? Because you got to the final bit and he's like, oh, this is for the win. And I'm like, yeah, all right, bomb.
Chill, mate.
Yeah. And luckily, my friend filmed it as well. So I'm happy with that.
Oh, nice one. Pop it on your YouTube. What made you. Because it's one thing to see the World Crazy Golf Championship and want to compete in it. What made you go on this journey of doing the preparation, making the YouTube videos? What inspired all of that? So what made you want to play? But then also what took you on this journey of putting all that preparation in? Where did that come from?
I think it's a personality thing. I mean, I played with my son and my wife in November before my second son was born. And I just, you know, I think we were 16. I hold one. I said, you know, why don't I do the World Crazy Golf Championships? I can't believe I didn't think this was a good idea. And then looked at the scores and was like, oh my God, these guys are really, really good. And then that's just me. I was like, well, I'm going to try and win then. And then just kept going and going and going and putting simulations in, and then realizing that even with the simulations, I wasn't getting to that sort of level. So that's what it was, really. Is I knew I wasn't good enough. So therefore, I had to keep going. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm glad I can stop now for a bit. But yeah, it's just a bit obsessive, really, of wanting the win.
Yeah, but the fact you actually achieved it, I guess, would make the obsession worthwhile. A lot of people have obsessed at different levels about this event and other events and achieved absolutely nothing. Mm. I mean, going by the metric of time spent in the course, to use a phrase someone else said, that certain members of the tour spend and get nothing back, and that your time that you put in, you achieved exactly what you set out to, must be a good feeling.
Oh, massively, yeah. And it's getting better as the days go on, if I'm honest with you. Like, now I'm looking back and thinking, you can only play the novices once, and I won it. You know, and I did get 26 holes in one, and that's, you know, that's a fair amount. And also, the pressure was on, and I didn't anticipate that level, because I'd never been to it. You'd seen the clips on BrickClip, but I'd never actually seen what the event's about. And when you turn up, and it's like, it's a circus. You know, it really is a circus. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, yeah. So, yeah, you know, I've got to take a lot of positives out of it, definitely.
Cool. Simon, any last questions for you?
Yeah, so looking forward to next year. You said you're going to be back.
Mm.
You set yourself quite a concise, concrete aim this time. Mm. What is your aim in 12 months' time?
Well, I'll obviously try and win. You know, I was trying to win this time. That's how it is. You've got to try. Obviously, I've now realised that how hard it is. You know, I was a little bit naivety before. I thought, I'll shoot 5 under for 6-7 times, it'd be all right. And now it's like, yeah, you know, you've got to deal with a lot else. So, but yeah, I think experience is everything. And maybe I won't be as nervous this time. I mean, I can't guarantee that because, you know, it's 7 rounds. It's 2 days out of 365. So, but that's my intention. I've already entered. So that will be my intention. And what can you do? You know, we'll find out.
Yeah. Awesome.
Nice. Well, look, Murray, everyone who wins that novice title eventually go on to do amazing things in the sport. So we'll be watching your journey very closely. I'm very happy to hear you'll be back next year. And thank you for competing this year. Thank you for making all of those excellent videos and sharing a bit of your journey with us. And thank you for appearing on this podcast.
Mate, thank you for having me. Have a lovely evening.